The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society. The Korea Society, in 2007, celebrating 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. On April 2, 2007, the Korea Society sponsored a lecture titled The Problem of North Korea in the Era of Terrorism by Professor An Kyung-man, chairman of the Korea Fulbright Foundation. The lecture, which took place in Seoul as part of the Korea Society's Spring Fellowship in Korean Studies for American Educators program, addressed the unique security challenges that North Korea poses to the world community, and recounted previous American and South Korean attempts to ease tensions with the North.
And, let me introduce you to them. Professor An Kyung-man, I'm happy to say, is one of my oldest friends in Korea. When I was the Fulbright director here from 78 to 83, I had the duty of putting together screening committees to evaluate applicants for this and that. And one of the first people I called to put on a screening committee was a young professor at the Korean University of Foreign Studies who had not too long before returned from getting his PhD in political science with an interest in American studies at from Florida State.
Florida.
The University of Florida. University of Florida. And Fulbright has a difficult time here in one regard, and that is that Korea doesn't subscribe to the good old American idea of volunteerism. In America, universities credit people for good service, good citizenship, by serving on committees and doing all sorts of things gratis. I just got back from doing an accreditation visit in San Francisco. No pay. We had one nice dinner and spent all day long working on this thing. I have to write up this long report. Now, in Korea, you're paid for every little thing. There are lots of white envelopes that circulate around. And fortunately, Professor An, for this presentation, is going to get taken care of Korean style. There is a little bit of money in it for coming to talk to us. But for the Fulbright, in the old days, there was no compensation. And when I call, most of the people that study in America, they understood that, and they would be willing to serve. And Professor An was always right up there helping us on our committees. Well, he stayed with Fulbright such that now, after doing a lot of other things, he's the chairman of the Fulbright Alumni Committee. That's what he's doing on his name card. That's not a full-time job. That's just a retiree job. In the meantime, he continued his career in political science at Korean University of Foreign Studies, which they like to talk about as the Georgetown of Korea, specialist in language and diplomatic studies, okay? And one of the greatest honors in his resume is that were you the first or just people to be elected president of their university. Now, Korea, when I first knew Korea, was not very democratic. Park Chung-hee said, economy first, democracy later. And there were a lot of non-democratic aspects of society back in those days. Well, when Korea turned the corner and decided to become fully democratic, they are more democratic than we are. And that is not an exaggeration, and one of the best examples I can give you of that is that Korea elects its university presidents from its faculty. Yeah, wow, is right, huh? That's unheard of, even unthinkable, in an American university, am I right? And so he was elected, I think, two terms. So re-elected, I mean, it's probably a great honor to be elected the first time, but to be re-elected, I mean, they really do like you. So he's had a great career. And are you retired now? Is that why you're doing?
Yeah.
Is that why the Fulbright is the name tag now?
Yeah.
Okay, he's working on the Fulbright Committee, which he might want to tell us about, I'm not sure. But he always gives a great presentation. He's one of our most loyal presenters for young Gene and I when we come to town. You've been making presentations to our group for 5 or 6 or 7 years, I
think. Yeah, maybe more.
Maybe more. Maybe from the beginning. Anyway, it's a great, great pleasure to introduce Professor An Kyung-man.
Thank you, Mark. Oh, okay. I just got back from the States too, so I'm very tired. I'm on jet lag. So I may make a lot of mistakes. I'm confused. I am. Usually I talk about Korea, South Korea and North Korea. But this time I like to talk more on North Korea because everybody is concerned with North Korea nuclear problems. So I want to talk more about that today. In general, I would like to talk about Korea, what Korea is, very briefly. And I would like to compare North Korea and South Korea. And then I would like to tell you what kind of interactions these two countries have. These two countries have had. And then finally, I would like to talk about the problems we have with North Korea. North Korea has several problems that we cannot ignore. So I want to let you know them, and we have to have the time to think about it. Okay. First, I want to tell you who Kim Jong-il is. You have heard of him, Kim Jong-il, yeah. He's widely publicized nowadays. Kim Jong-il is the person who ordered the detonation of nuclear weapons. And he did a lot of crazy things. Things that we hardly understand why he did it. Who is this man? I first wrote that he has inherited power from his father, Kim Il-sung, who died in 1994. And this Kim Jong-il is about my age. They say that he was born in 1941, but officially he's born in 1942. It is because of his birthplace. If it is recorded as 1941, he should be born in Siberia, somewhere in Soviet Union. But if it is 42, then it's the time his father came down to North to fight against Japanese. So his birthplace should be South Korea, somewhere in Korea. So they decided to make his birthday 1942 rather than 41. So actually he's exactly the same age as I am. And a few days later he was born. So I can compare myself with him very easily. He is shorter than I am. I'm short. I'm 5'6", but he's 5'2". But he's much heavier than I am. And he always wears platform shoes. And he lets his hair stand up all the time. So whenever you see his picture, you will see his hair all around here. It's not well arranged, but it has its own style. So we say that he may have an inferiority complex for his height. You know, he's very crazy about movies. He's movie mongo. They said that he has a collection of 20,000 movies. Movies that were made in the world. He has everything. And once he kidnapped a very famous, popular South Korean movie star just for the purpose to make a movie in the North. And we found a movie star in North Korea, suddenly advertising North. It was her, She was a very pretty woman, and eventually her husband was abducted too. He was in North Korea. He was a very famous director. So both worked there for making movies. But eventually, one day, they escaped from North Korea and came to South Korea. So the story is like a movie. But anyway, it was all done under the directorship of Mr. Kim Jong-il. So Kim Jong-il looks erratic, and he looks very brutal, especially when he deals with some people who are opposing to him. He's brutal, but he looks very cool, and he's lunatic, but he's definitely calculating. For example, I wrote here, when his father died, he waited for 3 years before he got hold of power. This is rather strange, but if you understand the Korean tradition in a long time, in Yi Dynasty, you had to observe mourning of your parents for when they passed away, for 3 years. So he did that before he really got all the power. For this three-year period, the North Korea was ruled by the person who died. So everything was signed under the person who passed away. That's really what happened. And then, after 3 years, this guy got the power. And also we can see what he's doing with the nuclear card. He's very smart and very calculating. And now he's on his pace. Bush has to deal with him. So we can't say he's just a lunatic. He's very calculating too. But he's inscrutable, even to us. In many parts, it's very hard to understand him. Let me first talk about Korea very briefly. Korean people look alike nowadays. So we say that we are very homogeneous. But if we trace back our long time history, we are mixed up. We are mixed with many different races. But now it's just Korean. We are unique. We are different from Japanese, different from Chinese. For example, if we see some people in New York from Asian, we can recognize Korean. We can differentiate Korean from Japanese or Chinese. Can you?
Usually I can't, but it's interesting. I wonder how much of it is dress and style. Some of it's shape of the face.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of it are other clues, non physical clues that also tip it off.
Yeah. Combination of two. It's look and the attitude and the way they keep their body formed, whatever. We can recognize Koreans, so we are very unique. And we have one language, and we have dialects, but it's all communicated. We can communicate, and we are very proud of this homogeneity in general. People talk about it often. So North Korea is same. North Korea is no different than South, because we are just one country before 1945, before we were divided into two. So our relatives are living in North Korea. My wife, for example, came from North Korea. She came down to South when she was 9 years old, when the war was broken, and she was a refugee, and so on and so forth. So she has a lot of relatives in North Korea. So we have, you know, family separation, and that's, of course, tragedy. The size of Korea. The size of Korea is about same as size of Minnesota, that's what they say, Minnesota. And country-wise, it is the size of Portugal. It is not big country, it's small rather, you know, compared to other countries like USA. But if you think of population, it's not that small. South Korea only, we have more than 48 million people. And there are 23 million in North Korea. So altogether, it's over 70 million. So it's a big country. When you compare with, for example, Western European countries, maybe Germany is the only country which has a larger population than South Korea, than Korea. So it's a big country when you think of North and South altogether. But when we compare with Japan or China, they're very small. The land size-wise, Japan is about 75% larger than Korea, and China is 43 times the size of Korea. So we are very small. We are sandwiched, they say, sandwiched. Nowadays we call ourselves sandwich in many aspects. We had a hard time. You know, historically we had a hard time because we were surrounded by big powers. And both Japan always, thought of expanding their land, the continent. And China always, came down to south under the name of protecting us, but actually, infiltrating us. Sometimes Manchuria will come down and Mongolia will come down. So we didn't have a peaceful time much in the past. Even now, as you see, we are surrounded by big powers. And USA is here. USA troop is here. So one more big country is added. Of course, Russia is here too. So all the big powers are here. So, Korea is not a simple place to enjoy peace. You always think about war and peace, peace and war. As I said, Korea was divided in 1945, we thought it would be just for a few years, but it seems to be forever. Politically, as Peterson said, South Korea is fairly democratic now. So we have a power transfer by means of vote, election. And we have now a very good local government. Freedom of speech, press, everything. So Korea, South Korea is very, very well recognized as a democratic country. But North Korea is just different. It's totally, entirely totalitarian country. There is no freedom of speech or freedom of habitation or moving or anything like that. You're very limited doing anything there. And you have a big brother who is Kim Jong-il. He's very big brother. He's watching you everywhere you go. That's the system they have. That's the system they want to keep. But nowadays it seems that it's not easy to keep the society like that, because we see a lot of North Korean refugees crossing the borderline, and they come to China and eventually join us. More than 1,000 North Koreans in a year come down the south nowadays. And I will tell you more, but 100,000 North Koreans in China waiting for coming to south. So that's the situation of North Korea. But still, the country itself is tightly controlled and very, very much totalitarian. So, and economically speaking, South Korea is okay. We had a rapid economic growth since 1960s, especially in 60s and 70s. President Park at the time, he was a dictator. He sacrificed democracy for the sake of economic development. So we had a very fast economic development. And then that kind of development movement was on in the 80s and early 90s too. And now we have some problems in the economy, but it's not that serious one. People want more and better and everything like that. But still, our economy is okay. The size of GDP is about 10th, between 10th and 12th in the world. So comparing the size of land, is sort of a miracle. So we are very proud of the economy. Although individually they are very frustrated, overall they are very proud of their achievement. But north, in the north, the economy is really, really bad, maybe worst in the world. Many people died of hunger, and still they are suffering from nutrition. So when you see North Korean soldiers, for example, coming to South, we find them very small. They're like kids, 15-year-old kids. They're so small. So there is a statistics which says that average South Korean 7-year-old kid, boy, is 7 inches taller than North Korean boy. That's the difference now. So that means it's not easy to have these two different societies get one, to be united. We found some difficulty in Germany, for example, when they had a unification, right? But our problem will be much more serious than Germany had that time. This is the reality of Korea. Okay, now I will talk a little bit about the interactions between South Korea and North Korea. We had almost no interactions in the past. It was confrontation between North and South since the war broke up in 1950. We had a Korean War. You remember that? The war lasted 3 years, and many Americans came here and they sacrificed their lives, and we really appreciate what you have done here. Since that war, North and South didn't have any good term at all, and always expected that the war will break any time. You know? So we are impatient. But it was 1998. That was just the year, very remarkable, when President Kim Dae-jung, you have heard of him? Kim Dae-jung. He declared the policy, what he called Sunshine Policy. Sunshine Policy. That's very, that is really something we had at the time. And he has committed engagement policy. He has a lot of talks with North Korea. Eventually visited North Korea and met with Kim Jong-il. And he gave a lot of money, a lot of gifts. And the two countries began to not only talk, but exchange things. What did they exchange? First of all, they have built sort of infrastructure between the two countries. For example, they have made new railroad lines reinstated, and cross-border roads were reconnected. It was all broken by DMZ, and direct telephone lines were installed. We have that kind of thing done. Although we have never used a train since we have reinstated them, we have used the bus and the cars coming and going between north and south for the purpose of tourism and for the purpose of some economic activities. And sometimes we have, I think, the government, on the government level, they use the direct telephone calls. So it's much better than the past when we had nothing between us. And also, North Korea allowed a small portion of North Korea for the South Korean people to visit. That's the call. That place is called Geumgang Mountain. Geumgang. Geumgang means diamond in Korea. It's a diamond mountain. The mountain is very pretty. So it's Diamond Mountain. Historically, when Korean people got married, for example, they would have a honeymoon at the mountain. When they finished the school, they would have a graduation trip to that mountain. So we have had South Korean people had a nostalgia on that mountain, and we have a lot of songs on that mountain. So the moment it was open, many South Koreans, influx of South Koreans, visited this mountain, and still we do. So now it's about, it was 1996 when it first opened, 1998, it's about 9 years ago, and now more than a million people visited that mountain. So actually that mountain became South Korean, because no North Korean pedestrians, for example, ordinary people will go there, you know. It's all well controlled for South Koreans to visit and to look. Of course, we pay for that. So they get money, but the mountain is ours now. And they also not allowed us, but they asked us to come to join their industrial park, which is called the Kaesong Industrial Park. Kaesong. Kaesong is the name of the city, which is second largest city in the north. And it takes maybe about 40 minutes from Seoul to Kaesong. Just to the north. So they built, we went there, we built industrial park there, and we produced things, and some businessmen, not the big business, but the mid-sized businessmen, went north to Kaesong, and now they developed a lot of companies there. And they predict that by 2010, maybe more than 100,000 North Koreans will work in the park. So North Korea has a great expectation on this industrial park. We have some social and cultural exchanges, but not much. We go there and watch propaganda, for example. more than 100,000 people will come for the mass game. And South Koreans are not that well organized. So they went there, they're shocked and seeing the people moving like a machine. But anyway, we have some exchanges like that. Singers and dancers and some writers and some professors too. But it's not a big deal. It's just very minor activities, I would say. Of course, we have a political dialogue, but that part is not easy. It's a very hard one. For example, we never point, for example, to the problems the North Korea has had. The Bush can do that, but our president cannot do that. If we do that, that will lead to some uneasy atmosphere, and they may shut the door and never want to talk with us anymore. Yeah. So political interaction is very, very limited. They welcome some economic activities and some benefits they gain, but nothing else. So overall, we give them a lot in terms of economy, but we gain nothing much from that. But people say that, well, we buy peace. That is true in a way, because since 1998, people don't worry much about North Korean attack to South. Even when North Korea had a nuclear test, and the world was surprised. South Koreans were not surprised much. You know? Well, we knew that they would have that. So what? You know? We are more relaxed. I don't know if it is good or bad, but we are relaxed nowadays. And South Koreans don't have much prejudice against North Korea nowadays. We have a certain level of understanding of North Korea nowadays. In the past, most of South Koreans, including myself, thought that North Koreans are unbearable and impossible to talk or to share any ideas or interaction. But now it's changed. We can see that. Okay. Whatever we have with North Korea, it doesn't solve the problems they have. So I want to give you several problems they have had. The first one I would like to point out is human rights problems. This one is a very serious one. The society itself, as I told you, is totalitarian, so there's very limited, maybe none, no freedom of speech, or no freedom of habitation and moving. And between 1995 and 1998, that's the worst time for North Korean economy. They had a heavy flood and drought coming and going. In the meantime, between 2 and 3 million people died of hunger. It's unbelievable. So you can't actually talk about human rights in this kind of situation. And as I told you, North Korea, in North Korea, the average 7-year-old boy is 7 inches shorter and 20 pounds lighter than his South Korean counterpart. And also, they have a detention camp. They have 9 detention camps. And we have had a very vague idea about this detention camp, which was like concentration camp in the north. But a lot of refugees escaped from this detention camp, came down to south, and they testified. They went to USA, they testified. They even made a drama called the Yodok Story. You know that? Yeah.
I saw it in L.A.
Oh, you saw that?
Very interesting.
Very, very interesting, yeah. I saw that. I was somewhat shocked then. I cried a lot. very, very moving drama. Anyway, they have this kind of detention camp. It was more than 9 in the past, but now they are collapsed and made a bigger one, very big, huge one. It's like a huge city. One detention camp is like a huge city. And
why did they put it in one place?
I don't know. Maybe it's more easier to control.
To manage.
Yeah, to manage. But they collapsed several small ones, big ones. But number increased because of refugee problems. More than 300,000 people are in the detention camps. That's what they said. As I said to you, more than 1,000 refugees join the South every year since 2000. And several hundred thousand people in China, seeking to come to join the South. And some of them wants to go to USA, and some did, right? Just few people went to USA. So it is very complicated and very serious problem. And another problem is illegal way harbory is earning money from foreign countries. It's way harbory, that's Korean word. We have seen the news. North Korean diplomats captured for smuggling liquor and some cigarettes, you know, some luxuries, some drugs. Unbelievable, you know. First of all, when it first came, I couldn't believe it. I thought it was just propaganda, you know, propaganda from outside. But it came again and again, and it came to be true. A lot of our diplomats, when they finish or when they travel, they would buy something valuable and bring back to their country. Or vice versa. When they come out of their country, they would bring some drug and sell it outside. So it's only illegal, of course. And that only shows the difficulty they have in terms of economy. And also, they sold some of the missiles to Iran. You know. So when they had a series of missile tests in 2006, it was last year, I think you remember that, July, for July 4th, it was America's Independence Day, right? So they had a missile test, short range, long range, mid range, you know. So Scud missile, they call it Rodong missile, and Daepodong missile. Daepodong is a long range missile. And it is said that some Iranian observers were there. Performances. So they do this for two purposes. One, to demonstrate the power, to USA and to South Korea and to Japan and even to China. And another thing is very much commercial ones. They prove that their ability, their capability, and then they sell it. As you know, we found some fake U.S. dollars, counterfeiting money. U.S. government found $2.6 million of counterfeiting money. It was all $100 bill, and they finally understood that it was it all came from North Korea. They pursued, and finally they found one particular bank called Banco Delta Asia in Macau. You know Macau? Yeah, southern part of China, in Macau. The money was in the process of laundering and counterfeiting, and it's spreading all around. That really took place. That's what American government said. Finally, the bank, the older North Korean bank accounts were confiscated by the U.S. government. Of course, U.S. government got the help from the Chinese government, and then the bank account of North Korea was closed. And this became a hot issue. Very, very hard issue, and it is still hard. The American people estimate that they have about 50 to 60,000 US dollars were counterfeit. It's not a big deal, but if you don't do anything, it can be a real problem. So it's understandable that U.S. has certain action on it. Although North Korea denies they did it, many evidences say that it's what they did. So illegal oil harbory is a serious problem. And now even the United Nations are concerned with this, and they say that. Oh sure. Okay. Let me talk about nuclear problem. Maybe this is the most interesting part of my lecture. And I hope that you know a lot about this nuclear problem. I don't have time to go in detail, but just briefly tell you some historical aspect of it, and then current issue of the nuclear problems. Historically speaking, we found North Korea accumulating plutonium since 1986. It was during the administration of Senior Bush, we found that they were collecting plutonium. And they estimated that maybe one or two nuclear weapons can be made out of this plutonium. That was 1986, almost 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago. Yeah. So since then, nuclear problem concerning North Korea has been a big concern for both South Korea and USA. But in 1994, the Clinton government decided to have an engagement policy. In other words, they wanted to have a dialogue with North Korea and persuade them to stop doing anything with this nuclear business. They had a good talk between the Clinton administration and North Korea. Even the you remember Albright? Madame Albright visited North Korea, and I heard she talked about the North Korea at that time. She said that North Korea welcomed even the American troops being in the South, because that could be American troops in the South will facilitate the peace in the Asian, in the Northeast Asia, because it can provide a balance of power. That's what North Korea told, maybe Kim Jong-il told Albright. She was very surprised. So they had a very good conversation around that time, you know. Even Clinton decided to visit North Korea. But it was too late, because the election was held and Bush became president. And he asked the Bush people if it's okay he visit North Korea, and Bush people said, please don't do that, we'll handle it. So he stopped there. That's the history. Okay, so engagement policy in 1994, around that time, was very positive ones. I think under that kind of movement, President Kim Dae-jung of South decided to have a sunshine policy. You know, it was possible to go together with the USA, so it worked at the time. Anyway, Bush had his Union Address, very famous one, in 2002. Realizing that North Korea didn't give up nuclear program, he declared the axis of evil. You know, three countries, axis of evil. So Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. North Korea was included, and we felt a little bit embarrassed, because it was the time, you know, we had a dialogue with North Korea. we had a lot of interactions. And Kim Dae-jung finally got the Nobel Prize because of his actions. And suddenly Bush came up and said that North Korea is one of the countries, the axis of evil. Very embarrassing. But he had reasons, you know. He had his information and everything. He thought North Korea didn't give up nuclear program. That was the main reason. Anyway, since then, there was tension. And And then the talk began again in, so September 19th, 2005, with the USA, China, Russia, Japan, South Korea, and North Korea. It's six parties, okay? Signed a preliminary agreement to end its nuclear weapons in return for security and energy benefits for North Korea. It was in 2005. September 2005. Remember September 19th. But 4 days later, September 23, 2005, the US Treasury Department imposed sanctions to cut off North Korea access to the Banco Delta Macau. I told you this. Branding it a criminal state, guilty of counterfeiting and money laundering. We had a lot of talks in South Korea. We understand the American position. Suppose the South Korean money was counterfeited by some country like North Korea or others. We'll be very embarrassed and we'll try to do whatever we like to do. Well, we understand that. But what we didn't understand was it was time USA had a good conversation, good, you know, diplomatic interaction with North Korea. Just 4 days ago, they had an agreement on nuclear freezing, right? And then 4 days later, without any conversation or anything, any information to know, they just declared. So North Korea was very upset, and the relationship went all down. It became nothing. All the effort by six parties became nothing, went to nothing. Anyway, that's the history again. And since then, there was all bad talk between North and USA, and the North Korea began to threaten both South and USA that they will have a nuclear test. In this process, on July 4, as I told you, July 4, 2006, North Korea launched missiles, and UN sanctions followed. And on October 9th, 2006, the nuclear test was conducted by North Korea. It was a very embarrassing event, and it shocked all the world, actually. So on October 14th, 2006, the UN Security Council voted unanimously to impose strict sanctions on North Korea. Sanctions on many areas. For example, ban on the sale or transfer of war weapons, a ban on international travel, and the cutting off North Korea from global banking in case they are connected to the North Korean weapon program. Ban on luxury goods to North Korea. Luxury is very interesting. And authorizing all countries to inspect cargo going in and out of North Korea to detect illicit weapons. Okay, these are the major things that they had a resolution, UN resolution at that time. Ban on luxury goods. This, of course, draws your attention. Why luxury goods? And if China complained, what do you mean by luxury? Well, what standard can you apply to make it a luxury or not? There was a lot of talk. But the main purpose of putting this one was that the Kim Jong-il to maintain his power. Okay? To maintain his power. He has to give the gifts to some important people in the North Korea. So he will give, for example, Benz, car Benz, you know, or some stereos, some mobile phones, or whatever, which is impossible to find in North Korea. He will buy these kind of things from outside and give them as gifts. And that's to maintain his power in the North. That's maybe what the US CIA found out, and these luxury items included. Apparently, these kind of resolutions and some strict measure against North Korea really made North Korea feel very embarrassed and made North Korea more difficult to survive. So, North Korea tried to find some alternative, and there came China, which tried to persuade North Korea. China did great thing this time, you know. And in the meantime, USA, even Bush administration, also changed the attitude of their diplomatic positions. They are more engagement than confrontation. They changed that. Maybe people said it's because of their problem in Iraq, you know, and Iran and others. So they would like to talk with North Korea and try everything with a diplomatic process. Anyway, they began to talk again. And finally, on February 13th, 2007, the six parties, the same six parties, agreed to talk the following actions in parallel in the initial phase. Initial phase is the initial step. First, the 60-day phase. They have a six-day phase. North Korea will shut down the Yongbyon, a nuclear facility within next 60 days. And in return, the five parties will provide energy equivalent to 50,000 tons of heavy fuel oil. This Yongbyon nuclear facility. Yongbyon is the most important place to produce material for nuclear weapons. So they will shut down this Yongbyon within 60 days. Okay, and then after that, the second phase will be disablement phase. North Korea will complete disablement of all existing nuclear facilities, including reactors and reprocessing plant in Yongbyon, and 1 million tons of heavy fuel oil will be provided to North Korea. And the USA, in the meantime, will lift the sanction on the BDA in Macau. Okay? That's what they decided. And the last one is very important for the North Koreans, because once it's lifted, their international financial activities will be reopened, and they can do some trades with other countries, and they can be involved in some financial activities too. Okay. So now it is on the process. We don't know how it will come out. this PDA in Macau is problematic at this moment because U.S. government decided to lift the sanction and the bank should allow North Korea to get the money. But now it's delayed, not because of the U.S. government, but because of the internal process of the bank and of China. So North Korea didn't get that back on the date they were promised to get. So they're very upset. They so they withdrew from the conference and they went back to their country. So now it's sort of stalemate. But I think it will be solved soon and the talk will be resumed. Then will it be all? What they did so far as what they have done, what they had done in 2005, they had a six-party talk and they had some preliminary decision on nuclear problem, remember? So what they did this time was the same thing. It's not the entire nuclear problem. It's not on the entire nuclear problem of North Korea. It's just the initial stage of stopping nuclear activity in North Korea. They have more to go. For example, a problem persuading the North to abandon uranium enrichment activities is separate from what they have done so far. And also persuading the North to abandon its nuclear weapons. They have nuclear weapons already. Remember? They have a nuclear test. So they have nuclear weapons. And they had enriched plutonium, which will be which will produce the nuclear weapons. So they didn't talk about this much. And they only talked about Yongbyon, but what about the places else where nuclear test was taking place, for example? So they have a lot of things to be taken care of until we declare that there's no nuclear problem in the North. Just a few days ago, I read the newspaper. There was an interview of Graham Allison. You know him? He's a professor of Harvard, and he came to visit Korea. He's a nuclear power, nuclear weapons expert. And his conclusion was this. The possibility of dismantlement of North Korea's nuclear power, nuclear program, before the end of Bush government, Bush administration, is less than 1%. Less than 1%. So he's very pessimistic. So it will take a long time. Okay. But what is my conclusion? My conclusion is more optimistic than his. I'm hopeful about this because there is a common goal for all the parties, maybe except for North Korea. The goal is we cannot live with nuclear armed North Korea. That's what USA's attitude is, and South Korea, Japan, Russia, and China, we're all saying on this. It's common point. With different reasons, all of us agreed with it. This is the red line to these five parties. So, as far as we are united on this issue as it is, I think we'll solve this problem. But when? I don't know. I will say there is a saying in Korea. When you are in the most hurry, That is the time to take a roundabout way. Okay, I'll finish my talk here.
We have about 20 minutes for some, that's good, for some questions and discussion. Daniel here has a question.
Yeah. I'm very interested in the democratic process, democratization process in South Korea.
Yeah.
It was done so rapidly.
Yeah, right.
And why? And it's like, I don't know much about Korean history at this point. What was there in the Korean past that allowed democracy to take root so deeply?
Well, I don't know if you go to the history, there will be some controversy, but I think Korea was basically highly centralized, you know, kingdom, and there was no democracy in that sense. But since the liberation of Korea, South Korea, and we've had a lot of influence from USA, basically, and some Western European countries. And I was very young, for example. I learned about democracy. It was all written in the book, although it was not practiced. So we knew the value of democracy. Okay, and we sort of had a dream that we could have a democracy too. But the president of Korea, unfortunately, one by one, was very dictatorial. And the first one, Sun Man-li, was very dictatorial. And then President Park was very dictatorial. He's totalitarian. And then after him was Chun Doo-hwan. He was a military man. He was dictatorial. So in this process, we see that the democratic element is growing, but it was suppressed by this totalitarian government, and there was a conflict between these two elements. So when I was a university student, it was 1960, we had what we call student revolution. So we demonstrated, and eventually the regime was downed by our demonstration, and that was a big deal. So students in Korea had the dream of toppling this totalitarian government anytime possible. So the demonstration never ended. And the government had a strong measure to suppress the demonstration or anti-democratic element. And the more they tried, the harder they found the registration and resistance from the democratic people growing up. And people like Peterson and others would talk about democracy in Korea, and it influenced too. Many American missionaries came here and protected some democratic element. So it was 1987. That was the turning point. In 1987, military government wanted to extend their rule in the south, whereas this democratic group decided to have a big showdown. And eventually it was June 1987. Students with some of the politicians began to march on the streets. And it was not only students, but civilians. All the people joined. Eventually, even the policemen who were protecting the government joined the demonstration. So finally, the government surrendered. Very peacefully, actually. So it was demonstrations day by day, you know, for several days, for maybe up to 20 days, for some day. And the president would come to the TV and say that stop demonstration, you know. If you do that, I will have a big measure, you know. So and so forth. But people demonstrated, and the ordinary people will join the students for this. And finally, they said,
Let me add a historical perspective on it, too, that I agree 100% with what Professor Ahn said about the contemporary history or the political science aspects of it and such, but Korea really has a lot of institutions of democracy historically. The monarch was not as autocratic as the monarchs of Japan and China were, for example. There was a Confucian ideal of remonstrance, that is to say that a person could criticize the king. And there were three organs of remonstrance called the censorate, the three censorate. There were staffed with bright young scholars whose duty it was to criticize the king. And a lot of the Joseon Dynasty kings suffered because they couldn't do what they wanted to do because they were hemmed in by the bureaucracy. So it was not so much a monarchy as it was an oligarchy in a lot of ways. And an oligarchy is at least one step closer to democracy than a strict monarchy is. And also the idea that he mentions of the student demonstrations bringing down the government in 1960 and then changing the, bringing about the great reforms in 1987. Student demonstrations go back well into the Joseon Dynasty as well. Students at the official government academy, if they were upset about something, they'd go on a work stoppage, on a demonstration. So student demonstrations and the idea of the student being sort of the conscience of society goes back not just to 1960, but goes back into the Joseon Dynasty, back to the 14th century.
So since 1987, the country really changed, and the leadership also changed. And right after that bloodless revolution in 1987, we found still the military man became president. You know, he was elected by the people. But this man was very much committed to the democratic process, and he absorbed it, and it really helped to establish new democratic society here. So that was democratization, and now I think we have a sort of a democratic consolidation process taking place in Korea. So it is not only democracy in the central government, but in the local government. You know? Although we have a lot of problems because of this abrupt change, I think it will be almost impossible to reverse the tide. I don't think it is possible to get back to the dictatorial government anymore in Korea.
What's your feeling about, let's say, your estimation of the way that the South Korean population feels about reunification with the North? Given an ideal world, given a chance, do you think that, you know, 90% of the people would say, yes, absolutely, we need to reunite Korea, or is it a little bit more divided than that? And of course, the question is sort of bouncing off the idea that in the reunification of Germany, people sort of really jumped up saying, we've got to do this, we've got to do this, and they're sort of lucky it turned out as well as it did, because it's not an easy thing to do, obviously, financially and all this stuff. So would you say that, generally speaking, Korean people would want to reunite with the North, or is there more of a divide for various reasons?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Actually, Germany was united, we had a high hope. It's our turn, you know. We'll be united too. So I think more than 90% of South Korean people felt we gotta be united. But we saw Germany suffering in the process, you know, especially because of discrepancies between those West and East. The economy had a crisis, and there are a lot of troubles. We read it in the news all the time. And in the meantime, we saw North Korea, the reality of North Korea. Around that time, in 1987 or 8, we didn't know much about North Korea either. You know? It was so closed. So we thought that whenever somebody, some government says that North Korea is so poor, we thought it was propaganda. But we found that it was true. They were very poor. And we began to worry about maybe same thing or the worse than German will take place when we try to unify our countries. So we became very serious. Now we are very serious about that, you know. I mean, we sentimentally we are for unification, but in reality, we got to be very careful. So we have to take sort of what we call functional approach, you know. So first of all, we deal with the economy with North Korea and make North Korea survive and get better. And when they are well off, then maybe we can talk about unification. So that ardent feeling slow down nowadays. Yeah, it is true. Even to the radical people, they don't talk much about unification nowadays. Yeah.
Is there some sense of how North Koreans feel about unification? I mean, as much as we can say, it must be hard to tell.
Yeah.
We hear about our people who are refugees. That's obviously a specific population. But I'm wondering about when people are fleeing North Korea, if they're economic refugees or ideological refugees. And if they're just economic refugees, then there is still a big ideological separation as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we could really understand why these are
born. Ideology-wise, we are now approaching to the era of non-ideological, ideology-free world, because Soviet Union was crumbled and all the what we call communist countries really changed now. Only few left, and North Korea is one of them. And even North Korea, they said, is not a communist world, communist country. It is totalitarian country. So it's just one person country. Communism doesn't work much about that. That's what they say. North Koreans are not widely open to the world yet. Some people living on the borderline of North Korea.
That's the one they
Now it's a Christmas time.
Christmas moment.
Okay. That's the one they loaned to us for the trip. This is Mrs. Chess stuff.
Chess here. So I think North Korean leaders, for example, are not serious about unification at all. Because if it's unified, they will have no place to go. Yeah, so they're not serious. And the people who know nothing about what's going on in the world will be just indoctrinated for unification, because they have a song and everything for unification, you know. And they think it's America who are here to block the unification. You know? So USA is our enemy, you know. And that kind of propaganda. There is still some people still living there with that ideology. But many of the wise North Koreans living in the borderline, or some informed North Koreans, will feel different. Maybe they will feel we should be unified. We are so poor, and we like to live in the South. So unification will be a way to get there. So it's all different, I think. Yeah.
It's just hard. It's hard, I think, to understand from the outside why it is that the population of North Korea hasn't, in fact. I mean, you can understand them not turning initially against their government, but now that their leader is not a war hero.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, it's hard to see how he can get such support from the population.
Maybe there is no alternative at this moment. Yeah. The only legitimacy comes from the inheritance at this moment, at least. And his power base is military, handful of military people support him. Without his figurehead image, they know that they can't keep the society intact. So that's their survival tactics. Anyway, time is almost up. I'd like to add one more for your question. How could democracy in South Korea prosper? I think it works with economy. If we are very poor, I think we'll be still struggling with totalitarian government. But we are on a certain level of economy. So when economy is growing, people feel something else, like democracy, the value of it. And they support it. If the civilians, pedestrians will join the demonstration. Why? Because they feel that democracy is very important now. They are okay with their living, and now this is time for democracy. So there is a theory, in America that economic development should come first, and then political development follows. And I kind of agree with it, you know. So we have had certain economic achievement. And the people had within themselves what they call revolution of rising expectation. Okay, revolution of rising expectation. And then that helped to create a new democratic society. So it always comes with the economy, I think. Yeah.
North as well, then.
Yeah.
That makes some sense.
Yeah.
Why would they possibly give up their nuclear program unless their only chip to try and gain some economic
control?
Yeah.
It's also a problem in the Middle East. I mean, you have the cart before the horse, and people can't feed their families, and they may get killed in the street. Why do they care about the government, whether the government's democratic or not?
Yeah.
Right.
Do you have time for one more quick question?
Oh, okay.
Korea?
Okay.
I was wondering, I mean, it's kind of a silly question, but why do we know so little? I mean, it seems in this day and age when spy satellites can see, you know, the color of your hair, and it's been so long, people have known for a long time, that, or at least perceived North Korea to be a threat for a long time. How do we know about North Korea, and why do we know so little?
Well, compared to the past, we know a lot about North Korea. In the past, we really didn't know much about North. I'm a political scientist. I didn't know much about North Korea. Whatever government said, Korean government said, I didn't believe, because I thought it was propaganda, you know. It was so secluded society. And even when you visit North Korea, you have no freedom of moving. You go somewhere North Korean bureaucrats will lead you to, So you will see what they want you see. It's very limited. Even now, they do the same thing. But nowadays, you know, a lot of refugees come out of North Korea, and some people for relief activities go to North and see more, and they come out with a lot of information. So we learn things like that. So still, North Korea is very, very, very limited, very secret society, you know. Satellite doesn't help much in that sense. they had just one day before they had a nuclear test. They said we'll have a nuclear test, and the Western people didn't believe it. They thought they were bluffing, you know. They really had a test, and still they didn't believe it.
Right.
Only when they had the smell, some ash, they said, "Oh, that's real," you know. So it is still possible. You don't know where what that guy's name is, who is concerned with the 9/11. Yeah, Osama bin Laden. You don't know where he is about. So there is something you don't know. Maybe for good.
He's not real anyway. Just some guy dressed up in a suit, just up in an outfit.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Listening to me.
The opinions expressed at this forum do not necessarily reflect those of the Korea Society. Thank you for listening to this Korea Society podcast. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Members of the Korea Society are notified of all Korea Society events, enjoy discounts on admission to programs, and a complimentary subscription to the Korea Society Quarterly. Memberships may be purchased online at our website, www.koreasociety.org.
The proceeding was a production of the Korea Society. For more information on our programs, please visit www.koreasociety.org.